book three ended with still trying to get a good way of inserting the sample into the gel. And book four, 1954, continues with that problem. Although, for a reason which I don't quite understand, the first samples studied on January the 10th there, we've got something wrong here because book three is ending Thursday. September 9, book 4 is beginning January 10th. All right, let's start again for this.
Okay.
So physical book 4 starts off on page 4 continuation of the September 10th entry in book 3. The preceding pages 1 and 2 are really later, and I'll come back to them at a later time. So here we are, Monday, September 13th, in physical book 4. Again, just trying to find out the best way of applying the sample to the gel. And looking at the effect also of voltage gradients. So the experiment on Monday, September 13th, is to try different voltage gradients. Gel is at 8.46 and 6 volts per centimeter or 7.5 volts per centimeter. Both okay, it says. And the images drawn by hand as usual show that the difference is a difference in migration, but not really any significant difference in what's observed in these two cases. Tuesday, September 14th, two tests made to determine if electrodecantation is important and to find out the effect of a small load at 6 volts per centimeter. And that's what that experiment is about. And the result is a sketch saying not kept and not conclusive for electrodecantation. Repeat this. With a summary of the status at this position being on page listed as page 14, put in by hand at some later time, that the spacers have a definite advantages over filter paper, but probably must be kept narrow to avoid electrodecantation. The 6 volt per centimeter results with a 0.8 millimeter spacer are the best to date. However, the practical difficulties with spacers are considerable. Cannot yet exclude fibrinogen as showing, so I'm still concerned about whether I can see fibrinogen or not. Thursday, September 16th, underlined heavily, 6 volt per centimeter plasma with 0.25 millimeter spacer. and a comment, no clear fibrinogen. I tried a slit, and I tried a slit with starch grains, and I tried a slit with glass beads, and not very much difference between them that I could see at that point. I tried fractionating the glass beads in 50% glycerol by mixing them and allowing them to settle, and the product could be pipetted when wet, like the starch. If it's better than starch, fractionate it more. So on Friday, September 17th, I'd test them, soluble starch as a supporting material in the slot in one place and glass in the other, with a comment that neither looks very good and they interfere with each other. So try something else. Try untreated starch and perspex beads. So there we go. On September 20th, I'm trying two gel set up with potato starch and lucite beads. And that's not hydrolyzed starch, that's just simple potato starch from BDH, or British Drug Houses. Later on, I had a lot of difficulties getting the right starch, and I used to get unhydrolyzed starch from British Drug Houses. Anyway, here's the test, Monday, September 20th, with lucite beads and potato starch using serum. And the comment with the not kept, but no signs of adsorption on these two. I can't see any difference between them. At 5:40 p.m. on Monday, the 20th, another gel set up. A very careful test of glass beads and plasma. 6 volts per centimeter. And, with a comment that it looks as if lucite is really better than glass beads. Better check tomorrow. And with a comment that it confirms yesterday, glass and lucite, nothing kept, but looks as if lucite might be a little bit better than glass. With a comment, a lucite query, okay, glass, definitely odd. Still worrying about it. And Thursday, September 23rd, accidentally used coarse soluble starch here. Did not discover until 5 p.m. I doubt if it would have made any difference anyway. but we'll see. With a comment on that experiment that was done on Thursday, September 23rd. Quite hopeless. Might have guessed when such large quantities are to be run, it was trying a very wide slot, or something of the order of 5 millimeter, a slot of 5 millimeters with serum is, with serum or plasma is much too large unless it's dialyzed. So the gel was badly overloaded. Meanwhile, the electrodes can do with improvement. Much precipitate on the platinum electrode, presumably colloidal silver borate. I don't know where that's coming into it. New batch of starch, not kept. The gel, not kept. The gel measuring voltage gradients again. And another conclusion about this whole business. Even starch shows erratic alphas. Therefore, try cut out narrow slits with no spacers, trying to get away from these problems of inserting the sample. Monday the 27th of September shows an attempt to measure voltage gradients using a platinum grid and a dynamic potentiometer instead of the copper electrode. So it's copper borate versus saturated potassium chloride calomel with a platinum grid. Usual changes in voltage gradient where the albumin is, so not due to the problems with copper borate that I was worried about. Typical experiment again of a paper, number three paper, of a slit and of a slot with coarse potato starch as the filling material. This is on Tuesday, September 28th. Prepared centrifuge serum from this tomorrow and run three gels. Then so Wednesday, September 29th, has a gel with number three paper slot, a gel with a slit, and a gel with coarse potato starch. And the conclusions are that the starch gives approximately the same result as the slit, so that it the starch grains are pretty well as good as nothing in the slot, which is what I eventually published, that that starch grains were perfectly satisfactory, a little bit laborious, but satisfactorily. The three diagrams with the paper slit and the starch are very, very similar. I am beginning to understand the that there is a binding protein, because on October 1st I do a sample, I do a test with a hemolyzed serum and plain serum, and I the gel sketches show that a band that was definitely hemoglobin combined with something, alpha 2 plus hemoglobin is what I call it, is in a different place than the alpha 2, than what was alpha 1. So notation is difficult. Alpha 1 definitely decreases in the hemoglobin, in the presence of hemoglobin, and I called the other alpha 2 plus hemoglobin, but it's the same protein moving from a slower position to, when combined with hemoglobin, moving faster because of the hemoglobin charge, even though, as I now know, the molecule is bigger. Gordon Dixon experiment, say. And then on Wednesday, October the 6th, Gordon Dixon new serum. I needed some good serum for later tests, so I got some from Gordon Dixon. And it's labelled later in crayon as one with a circle around it. That's when I began to call that pattern a type 1 pattern. It's a later entry. But here is Gordon Dixon serum made October 6th. On October 12th, a George Connell sample taken. So I've got good samples from my two friends, Gordon Dixon and George Connell, both of whom are graduate students of Charlie Haynes' lab, and these two samples later become the on-record samples, as it were. So here is George Connell serum on at 6 volt per centimetre in yesterday's 15.5% gel. Mechanically very good. Though this particular gel was not kept, as October 14th one is much better at 16%, so I got an even better run. October 14th, nothing very special. October 15th, Gordon Dixon serum and George Connell serum set up successfully in new trays. And then I have an image of the two gels, which I always like to show if I give a talk about the work. So it's a page subsequently labeled page 81 in the September 1954 book, where George Connell and Gordon Dixon samples are sketched. That page 81 I've used as a slide many times. It's one of my favourite pages of the samples, and I always make the little joke, I got tired of getting blood from myself, so I got blood from my friends. Partly true. Well, certainly from my friends, and I was a bit tired of giving blood. Thank you. And then on October 25th, Monday, October 25th, I got a sample of blood from Beth Wade, the usual 1 hour room temperature to the cold at 1 p.m., centrifuges, etc. And four observers can see no hemolysis. And I make the comment that this is Rh negative blood with double underline. So I must have been wondering if there might be anything different in Rh, whether my I could see any difference in the samples. My comment is, get more samples of Rh negative, though Rh negative is due to absence of antibody of course that's antigen really, on red cells. Check if Beth Wade ever had transfusion or was in menstruation. And I don't know why I was thinking about that at this point. Only 20% of Rh negatives develop antibodies to become Rh positive. Therefore should test quite a number. I think it's probably because at some time in that period I began to be interested in blood groups and had gone to learn something about blood grouping by going to the hospital for sick children, where a very great friend was head of the blood grouping group. Her name will come back to me in a moment. Getting at my age, they disappear occasionally, and her name has gone for the moment. She was the person who found the Lewis blood groups. The ones related to AIDS. I'll maybe come back and add a comment later about that. They were important in understanding why some individuals are resistant to the AIDS virus, whereas other people are not.